Introduction, just very okay. Public comment.
Andrea, are you ready? Andrea, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to call the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting to order at 6:33 on Thursday, May 18th. So we need a roll call, I think.
Yes, Member Lee?
Here.
Member Guthrie?
Here.
Chair Ikeda?
Here.
Member Barnage?
Here.
And Member Brunet?
Here.
So first of all, we have need to know if we have any public comment.
Good evening, Zone 3. My name is Chris Magdoscu. I'm the new Director of Public Works for the City of Arroyo Grande. I thought I'd come tonight and introduce myself. I'm replacing Jeff English, so I've got those big shoes to fill with Jeff being gone. But it's a pleasure to be here. I'm getting up to speed on all the local issues. And just a little sidebar, I used to come up to the area when I was a child, so I got accustomed to the area. So it's really interesting to come up here to actually work now. And so I'm a pleasure to be here, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Welcome. Any other public comment? Seeing none, Andrew.
Okay. Yeah, I did want to just introduce, and I provided copies to the board as well as there's some for the public as well. This was a letter that was sent today to Rita Neal, the county council, from both OCSD council as well as Pismo Beach. And just to kind of sum it up, it is in reference to stating that the Board of Supervisors had already allocated the fiscal year 2017-2018 water and that there are no provisions for retroactive reallocations, as well as that the LORP only provides for changes in allocations under the adaptive management provisions and evaporation losses. So I wanted to provide that so it's for your view.
So just a question, if I might, Andrew, so does this relate to action item 8A as well? So in your opinion?
Yes, okay. from OCSD Legal as well as Pismo Beach, correct.
Okay, so we can maybe have some further discussion about that under that item as
well.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other public comment, we can move to approval of the minutes from March 16th, 2017.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, and do we have any public comment on that? Okay.
No. Okay, all in favor? Oh, one public comment. Ben?
Are you asking for public comments specifically on that letter or on the item in general?
On the minutes.
Oh.
Okay. All right.
Keep up.
We'll get to that, though.
Yeah, we'll have public comment at the end as well.
So, do you need a roll call on the minutes, or how do you do that?
We do not need a roll call on the minutes, no.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. So we'll move on to the water plant operations information. To date, Lopez Lake elevation is 499.05 feet. The storage in acre feet is 30,634. We're at 62% capacity. We have 34.33 inches of rainfall to date. The plant production is 4.25 million gallons a day. Downstream release is 1.7 million gallons a day, and state water is 1.1 million gallons per day. Any questions?
I did have just one question. So the
yes.
So the downstream, how far is the creek getting? Is it going all the way to the ocean still, or has it gone back underground in some portions?
Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director of Public Works. You know, I don't know if it has or hasn't. I was just looking at my table here. At 1.7 MGD, that means we're slightly less than 3 cubic feet per second,
okay.
Which is down to about our minimum in order to keep the upper creek actually flowing.
Okay. And so do you anticipate that release will be kind of consistent until the environmental releases are completed, is that kind of going to be a consistent flow for a while, do you think?
It's hard to say. I think we're getting some warm weather here, and there's probably some, well, I know right at the base of the dam, there's irrigation and farming activity. I expect we'll start creeping up like we typically do, so that, what are we, May, June, by July, easily up in the 7.58 CFS range.
Okay.
Gotcha. If it's a typical year, and I think it will be.
Okay. Thank you.
On your question, interestingly, today, there was a few places in the Rio Grande Creek that flow was minimal, and I happened to go to Oceano down the 22nd Street Bridge, and there was actually water still flowing there. So it was kind of interesting that places, it was kind of like you mentioned, could go dry, but it comes back up in other places. Okay, any other questions about the plant and operations? If not, Mark, do you want to talk about the projected reservoir levels?
I can do that. In your packet is our standard table, page 8.
Yes.
Actually, that's projected reservoir levels. Is that where that is?
Mm-hmm.
Can't find 8. It. First thing to notice is I noticed that the header up there has a non-updated revision date. It says revised 331, mm-hmm. and that looks like it's been revised about 5-3. So probably sometime last week or the week before that the projection was done. And you can see with the current level at 3644 and the last data point here at 29839, pretty much consistent. And we expect to see, based on historic performance of the reservoir, a slight decline as we move forward. I would note, however, that Lopez Creek continues to run rather well. And I expect that even in the last 2 weeks, we're probably at elevations above our projections. Again, difficult to predict as we get later on into the season. And I think what we'll probably see on the next one of these is I'm looking at it, push it out a couple of 3-4 months rather than just 2.
Okay, any questions?
Oh, and I'm remembering now. I wanted to note that, and it'll come up later on, but 30,644, 62%, with a LRRP trigger of 20,000, so we're about 10,000 above. We measure evaporation at the reservoir, and of course it varies based on surface area, but at our current surface area, we expect to evaporate nearly 4,000 acre feet of water.
This
between now and next April 1st, and most of that through the summer. That's a significant amount. So when we talk about planning in the future for actual wet water use, we're then 6,000 above the LRRP trigger again. Probably modified somewhat by that inflow. But again, Lopez Creek flowing, Arroyo Grande Creek, Upper Creek not flowing. So there's differences even in our two watersheds. So we'll be tracking that carefully with the TAC as we move ahead.
Okay, thank you. I did have one.
I
know you've been sorry.
That's okay.
Before I forget.
Yeah, you go.
I know you've been trying to get people to use that slowcountywater.org. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the Flood Control District website.
And I'm talking about the if people want to go look at the stream flows and the actual, rain totals, all that kind of stuff. Is that where it is?
Well, slowcountywater.org was where it was at. That actual website's going to be going away soon. The county is getting a brand new website countywide. So that information has actually been transferred over to another website, which I believe is wr.slowcountywater.org. So if you put the W and the R in there, you're going to see the brand new software program.
Okay.
And yes, that's where you go and you can see the real-time stream flow.
Okay. And the reason that came up is because I've been telling a lot of people to look at that thing. It's really incredible website. But I know last year they stopped launching boats at Lopez. Mm-hmm. Do we know what level the lake got when they stopped launching boats, and then what level it got to when they started relaunching boats?
That would have been, not this fall. So I was standing up there talking to a reporter about boat launching. Mm-hmm. I want to say a total storage somewhere around 12,000, 13,000, something like that.
And I think it was about around 50% or 40-something percent when they opened the boat launch.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the water actually came up over the boat launch ramp, but they didn't open it right away because, like all of the lakes, the amount of floating debris presented quite the hazard out there.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Mark, between now and next summer, did you say we're going to lose 4,000 acre feet to evaporation? I mean, anticipated. Is that what?
That's
next summer?
That's anticipated.
Okay, yeah. Next summer. I just want to know the date. I thought you said April, but I wanted to.
Well, that's a water year calculation.
Yeah, okay.
Then we have that April 1st to March 31st water
right.
year.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mark?
Just to follow up on Kristen's, just to make sure. So between now and April of next year, if we got no rain and no appreciable inflow, we'd be at 26,000. We'd be 4,000 acre feet less.
Yes.
Between now and then. Okay. So obviously replenishment and so forth might change that, but evaporation is still going to evaporate.
Right. And what it really means is if we start making estimates of inflow for next year, we just have to be careful that we don't add the inflow to the 30,000 and think we have a different number.
Mm-hmm.
Evaporation is an important outflow of the reservoir that we don't often think about. And it does, I think in most forums where the actual evaporation depth of water, which is a little bit more than 6 feet of water, I think we're about 74 inches, something like that, we've had to explain that number more than once. And just for the record, that is a measured number. We have a device called pan evaporation, which is a scientific device that's filled with water. It's a specific size made out of stainless steel, and its depth is measured down to the micro inch. And then those records are kept weekly and have been since 1969. So on average, 74 inches, and then you look at the surface area of the reservoir as it is now, and that gives you roughly 4,000 acre feet mm-hmm. in that top 74 inches. Obviously, this is wonderful, but if the reservoir was at 100%, it'd still be 74 inches, but the total amount of water evaporated would be nearly twice.
So do you take into account, I know this goes back to the 1960s, but do you take into account the recent weather that we've had that has been what I would consider above normal temperatures for extended periods of time with the evaporation rate? I mean, I'm assuming that plays into it somewhat.
No, we really don't, because we don't have equivalent records of temperature, daily temperature, and wind is also important that match up to those evaporation numbers. So you're working on a long-term average, which to some extent, now that we have all these years of records, there would be some of those years similar to what we've got now.
Mm-hmm.
But again, yeah, it's just a long-term average.
Okay, thank you. Any public comment? Moving on to information items. Christy, you want to report on your third quarter budget status?
Good evening. Christy Smith, County Public Works Finance Division. I'm here tonight to provide you with is it on? Can you guys hear? Okay,
yeah.
I can't hear myself. I'm here tonight to give you the fiscal year 16-17 third quarter budget report for Flood Control Zone 3. This report is through March 31st of 2017. At 75% of the fiscal year, expenses totaled approximately 55% of the annual budget. In your packets, there are three graphs reflecting the third quarter budget versus the actual expenses in three categories. In order to streamline the process of producing these charts and graphs, I've removed the labor and overhead line that separated out the total cost of labor, regardless of which effort it was related to. So instead, on the routine O&M chart, I've included a line that says labor hours, and it will include the amount of hours worked during each quarter. So moving on, the first graph displays routine operations and maintenance. At 75% of the fiscal year, expenses were 67% of the budget, resulting in approximately $1.1 million of available balance for the remainder of the year. The second graph displays non-routine operations and maintenance. At 75% of the fiscal year, expenses were 42% of the budget, resulting in approximately $483,000 of available balance for the remainder of the year. The balance available is due primarily to the HCP efforts. The contract issue was resolved earlier this month, and work will begin to move forward again. For most of the efforts in this category, the unspent balances at year-end will be carried forward into next year so the work can continue. The third graph displays capital outlay. At 75% of the fiscal year, expenses were 20% of the budget, resulting in approximately $664,000 of available balance for the remainder of the year. The majority of the balance available is due to the pH suppression and scaling control project, and unspent balances at year-end will be carried into next year to continue the projects through completion. The first installment billings for the fiscal year 17-18 have been mailed to the agencies, and payments are due July 1st. And lastly, I have a handout just for informational purposes. This is a page from our fiscal year 17-18 special district's proposed budget book. It's an updated version of your committee's recommended uses for the district-funded designated reserves.
Long stack, sorry. Those are my notes.
Thank you. And that's the end of my report. Any questions?
I do have one question. Thank you for the updated numbers. So I see that some projects have expended all of their funding, but obviously we finished the project. So on the non-routine O&M.
Non-routine, okay.
Yeah, the third item down, the terminal reservoir intake repair.
Yes.
So it looks like that went slightly over budget. So is it projected to use savings from other projects that don't go?
Yes, we've completed that project, so it won't spend any more.
Right, but you'll use savings from other projects to
backfill?
Yes,
in this category.
Okay, in this category. And then we can have a discussion as to the status of the capital projects.
I believe that's later in your evening.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
No?
Okay. Thank you.
Any public comment? Seeing none, we can move, Andrea, to your climate update.
Okay. Got some pretty slides for you tonight. So looking at May 2017, what a big difference since this time last year. But if we're comparing to our last meeting in March, it's pretty much the same. So as we're all aware now, we are in an abnormally dry climate at the moment. So we'll see what July brings. And now we're looking at our forecast for the temperature, and it looks like for May we'll be having above average temperatures compared to this time last May. And for precipitation, that EC means we have equal chances of having below average, average, or above average rainfall when compared to this time last year. So that concludes my climate update. Any questions?
Questions or public comment? Hearing none, Mark, would you like to report on the E-Corp HCP contract?
Yeah, certainly. You have a memorandum from Katie Drexage in your packet, just to let you know that consistent with your recommendation from your November meeting, the Board of Supervisors did approve a new contract with E-Corp Consulting. The time frame that it took to do that was due to the fact
that the old contract expired before the new contract could be put onto the agenda, which, as you can imagine, requires a whole different process. But in any event, that is done. E-Corp is right now working with county staff and TAC members to schedule their kickoff meeting to get the work plan moving ahead. The copy of the work plan is in your staff report. And as you recall, E-Corp did our most recent reservoir model, working in conjunction also with H.T. Harvey in support of the HCP. There's a little bit more work to be done on that. We deliberately did not fully fund all of the work because we knew that when you get into reservoir models and HCPs, there's a period of back and forth with the federal resource agencies. So we've gone ahead and funded that work, although it's not yet started, as we're taking a little bit of time out on the HCP in order to take our reservoir model that we spent a lot of money on and use it to inform the deliberations about possible contract amendments so that we can actually look at different versions of the new contract, run those through the model, and each agency can see all the way back to the beginning of the reservoir how any particular change in the contract might have affected their available water supplies overall. I like to say that what Zone 3 has invested a lot in that reservoir model and other parts of the HCP, so fortunately we're able to leverage that investment and use it for more than just the HCP. And this is a great use of that. That's the bulk of E-Corp's work, is to run the model. Related to that, since they work out of San Joaquin Valley and are involved with many, many reservoirs, they're also tasked with bringing examples of different contract models for reservoir operations to the TAC so they can be examined and compared and then alternatives formulated off those existing examples, and to do that work again as your technical group. And then perhaps ultimately individual agencies then move forward looking at potential contract amendments.
Okay, any questions for Mark?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine's a kind of a just nuts and bolts on the was it page 18? So you've probably explained this to us in the past, but my thick skull kind of makes it seem that so if the E-Corp contract is $113,000, so that's shown in parentheses. So how is that a credit? Or I mean, it looks like our final credit slash billing. Using Grover Beach for an example, was $33,900. Now an additional billing of $20,000 to so
this handout was actually from a previous meeting. This had to do with your fiscal year 15-16 billings. So what it's showing was that top line was the credits that you would have been getting back from the 15-16 fiscal year. And what we did is we allocated the $113,545 between the agencies, and we just withheld that. We didn't give it back to you in credit. We're still holding on to it so it can pay for this upcoming work. Okay. And then once the work is done down the road, whenever that is, any difference over or under will be just included in the year-end true-up of that year.
Okay. And so the credits, there's no credits in the July 1st billing that's already gone out then. So
the July 1st billing is simply the first installment, the first half of the proposed budget. And then when we get to the second installment, that would include your year-end true-up credits as well.
Okay. See, I knew you'd explained it before. I hadn't remembered. Thank you.
Any other questions? Ben, Mark and mentioned a meeting with E-Corp. Did we? So I don't have to pull out my phone right now. When was the date on? Did you guys get a notice on that? It came out today in the email.
Say that again. I'm so sorry.
Well, I know that Ben was on the email. E-Corp wanted to have a kickoff meeting next Wednesday, possibly. I think.
May 24.
No, I wasn't for you. Sorry, Christy.
Yes.
I thought we'd bring it up now since everybody here is supposed to be at that meeting.
Yeah, I believe it's scheduled for the 24th at 11 o'clock here.
Okay.
11 to 11:45.
All right. Thank you. If you guys want to put that in your calendar. I think it's the TAC and the this group
and the
here.
Advisory group?
Yeah.
So that's May 24th, 11?
May 24th, 11 o'clock, right here with
here
E-Corp.
At Pismo City Hall. Okay.
Yes. Okay, any public comment on that HCP? Hearing none, we'll move on to Andrea. You want to give us a little update on the Castaneda request?
Sure. This is a verbal update and just a little background for Member Guthrie and Brunet and our members of the public. Back in September of 2016, we had an applicant by the name of Carlos Castaneda attend our advisory committee, and he was looking for some feedback from the committee regarding an easement across his land that's adjacent to Lopez Recreational Area. At that time, the committee provided mixed feedback for the most part. They recommended that he work with county planning and building. And just an update so we can close the gap, he has decided not to move forward with his request. So I just wanted to inform you of that.
Okay, thank you. Any public comment?
Thank you.
Okay, hearing none, we have a capital projects update. I think that's you again, Mark.
Is it me or you?
I can do it.
Either or.
I think I'm just looking at the list here. It's pretty straightforward. The turnout skater project, that was getting the connections all made to the last turnout, which I think is Oceano. The others should be up and running or nearly so. And that's so that the operators can control the valves and read the meters, flow rates from the plant, and also so that the participants from their SCADA screens can read flow rates and all of those sorts of things and see what's going on with the system. It's been a long time coming and had some rocky points about trying to make those appropriate connections between the valves up and down the system and the plant itself. I think they ended up settling on radio. Yeah, I think it was radio communicate, looked at cell phones and other things. Lopez being an older system, who knew in 1969? They didn't install fiber optics along the pipeline when it went on. Parking and roadway, that's pretty straightforward. In order to save money, what we do when we need to resurface that parking lot and the roadway is we combine it with one of the large county road paving projects. So instead of the contractor having to charge us to go out there and do that one, we spread the mobilization costs over the whole situation. So it's expected in the May-June timeframe we'll get the parking lot serviced. There was some damage due to a pipeline leak a while back. That's all been properly repaired, so it's ready to be swept and paved and keep that in good working order. The programmable logic controllers, replacement and programming, that's on the membrane filter racks that we have. You'll recall we got a sixth rack moving forward to install it. And as things happen, the PLCs on the other five are obsolete. So they wouldn't talk to number six, and there was concern that they would die. That became a capital project. The PLC replacement is tied to the membrane replacement, which is tied to the strainers. The strainers are a very fine metal filter upstream of the membranes, which are the fine filter. And all of those things have to be coordinated and done in a specific order in a very short time frame. So staff in the engineering office is working to get all that coordinated and efficiently get the work done while the plant remains operating. So you'll see numbers like sixth rack unchanged, 80%. That's because the strainers are catching up to it. The PLC is ready to go and everything else. It's really one project that became three, and now it's back to one to get it done. And the equipment audit and replacement is, that is an effort, which is a little bit past due, to go through the plant identify each piece of equipment, its age, and its critical status within the plant, so that we are either replacing things just before they break, or we have parts on hand when they might break. Unfortunately, our new water plant is approaching 15, 18 years, something like that, which in water plant world is time to expect major components to need some level of replacement, and we've seen some of that. That's the warning that you need to get your audit and your paperwork all set up in order to start renewing things on a regular schedule or be ready to replace them. And then there's a nice list on the back of upcoming projects for the next fiscal year. I don't know that I have any detailed information on those. We can answer questions as they come up. I see the fault zone repair. That sounds kind of ominous. The rock at the left abutment of the dam, so not connected to the dam. You look at the dam, it dives into the natural rock, and then over there around the corner is an area of some soft rock. Doesn't currently leak, but it tends to erode into the lake and break away, and where it's above the road, it falls in the road. And the idea is, as it's, convenient, I suppose, to get in there and spray a concrete sealant over that so it doesn't potentially leak in the future. My understanding is it doesn't leak now. But if it does start to leak, then it gets to be rather bothersome, and you might not have an opportunity to deal with it. I believe at the lake level we're at, we're still good to go on that. Not quite sure.
Okay. Any questions for Mark?
No. I just have a quick one. So the and I think it's just more of a kind of a re-update of the main monies available, and therefore the work effort available is on the pH suppression. So I know when we initially approved those monies, it was a very critical time. So because of the drought situation in the plant operations and so forth, so has that stabilized, and so the pH suppression is the pH of the plant is not actively eating the plant anymore, and so these are now going to be done on a more realistic staffing time frame, or how is that going to work?
Well, I believe so. There was a short-term acid injection project that was built and completed and is running. Okay. So we have a nice three-quarters of a metal building and hydrochloric acid feed system there, and with all the accoutrements that are needed. And it's being used on a regular basis. The pH of the feed water into the plant has dropped somewhat, but not optimum. So we're running that system. It's on automatic to get that pH to the optimum level, so there's no ongoing issues with the plant now. That's been solved. And I think we're probably back on a there's not a lot of difference in the schedule that we were on and what we were proposing other than timing. Because we had the interim system planned and on board and up and running, we weren't going to push the permanent feed system into an emergency condition and do all that high-speed contracting and spend a ton of extra money. That was never the plan for that. I think it was judged to be more efficient to do the smaller, more temporary, cheaper system at this point. I think the operators are scratching their heads about re-looking at the priority of the permanent one, and that'll take place from an engineering perspective as to whether it's do we keep that on schedule, the permanent one, or do we slide it down and use the temporary one a little more. I suspect we're not going to do that, just looking at reservoir levels and the critical nature of making sure that pH stays below a certain level, given the impact that it had on the plant. The deposition of calcium throughout everything was of great concern for a while there.
Okay.
Just to kind of, because I guess one of the reasons for my question was, if we're not going to if we're going to do these in a different time frame. I forget if we if there was something that we pushed off because of these pH suppression projects that we should potentially bring back. I forget if we had had delayed a project to do this work.
You know, I imagine we would have because the TAC and the staff keeps a regular capital replacement program going. I think we might revisit that, but I suspect not. Again, there's thinking that to be prepared for a low reservoir level and wild swings in pH is really something we need to have.
Okay.
Plus, it's a way to guarantee the reservoir will fill up and we'll never use it again.
So the question I had, the follow-up, was the difference between the temporary and the permanent. Is it like a capacity change? The permanent would be able to do a lot more than what the temporary one can. Is it more of a, just an interim basis?
Yeah, the temporary one, it's nice enough. It's kind of a low-cost, three-sided metal shed with a gravel floor. We've got some wire racks and then large plastic shipping containers of the acid setting under the shed with one side opening. So it's not the kind of thing that's going to take a couple of years worth of weather and really be something you'd want to depend on. So it really does need to be in an enclosed structure with more permanent spill containment. We have that now from a construction site, a plastic tub system that comes with them. So it really is just something that's just not going to erode away from weather and exposure.
Sure. Thank you.
So I think part of Mark's question, too, is that from the TAC meetings, the increase in the water, the level of the lake has improved the water quality, which has brought the pH of the water down, mm-hmm. which is that's been the most significant impact, correct?
Yeah, definitely. I think the incoming flows, and I'm just trying to remember that, are still above 8. And as the water goes through the plant, it tends to pick up a little pH, I believe. So we're adjusting the number, I want to say, is 7.8 going in, and then back up into the optimum range as it comes out of the plant.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Any public comment? Hearing none. I'm a little confused on action item 7 since there is, I don't think there is one, is there?
No, we have no action item 7 tonight.
Okay. So moving on to action item 8. Mark, want to give us an update? We've got it all in our packets here, but
yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, you have a packet there. Essentially what happened is the governor, starting at the state level, took action to rescind the drought and offended all of us by not checking with Zone 3 Advisory Committee first, which would have been my advice. And then that put everybody sort of in a squeeze. We were anticipating some action from the state on the drought in June, and that was the State Water Board and other staff's opinion. But for whatever reason, that decision was made earlier. The county itself, as you know, declared a drought following the governor. That helped trigger our LRRP along with the reservoir level. It was tied to that. The board's drought proclamation also created something called the County Drought Task Force, which includes Public Works, but also County Health Department, Social Services, Farm Advisor, Ag Extension, the Sheriff, Office of Emergency Services, if you can imagine anyone, any department, and then at their meetings on conference phones, similar state agencies meeting monthly to detail issues with the drought. So that's the group that informed the board through the admin office about drought issues, everything from Zone 3 to impacts to farming to social impacts and those sorts of things. So that group met towards the middle of June, April, at their regular meeting, did a roundtable. I attended for Public Works and informed them of the situation with Zone 3, that we have essentially a drought contingency plan that's linked to that emergency proclamation. First off, let them know that our reservoir has come up nicely, but it's only 61, 62%. just 20,000, was it 20? 10,000 above the trigger for the LRRP. Inform them of some of the issues that I've heard from the NCMA about how the groundwater is behaving and the link between the reservoir and the groundwater and the water supplies of all of the five cities. So they hesitated a little bit and then decided to recommend to the board at the board's May 3rd meeting. The board has a drought update every 30 days, that the board go ahead and schedule an end to the drought proclamation for next week, May 23rd. Partly and mostly in order to give the advisory committee, the board's advisory committee on Zone 3, time to consider and weigh in on the issue. So that's essentially why we're here. This is your opportunity to tell the board before they take action that affects Zone 3 what the advisory committee's perspective is on that. We did get some background information on that in the board's May 3rd staff report, and then their May 23rd staff report is out, and it also has additional information about what the board might do. We talked about this at the last TAC meeting, and the TAC's decision was to draft a short report for you and a letter to go to the board from the advisory committee that becomes part of the board's information on the 23rd when they consider the drought proclamation. And essentially it describes the situation in Zone 3, just as I've described, and also points out until we have groundwater numbers from the fall, having an accurate picture of what's really going on with the groundwater is not possible. Just a spring measurement, you'd be guessing what it really means. And I think your staffs can inform you about some of the changes that have been seen in the northern part of the Santa Maria Basin that caused them to not want to look back at past years and do a projection based on the spring numbers. There's some things happening in the groundwater basin about direction of flow that would give you pause in using historic numbers to project from the future at this point. So the idea, the essential idea of the letter is to explain to the board why it is that Zone 3 believes that a water supply emergency still exists within Zone 3. And then to go along with that, admin or county admin staff report that's online now points out all the way down at the end that the board could choose to rescind the emergency for all but Zone 3 of the county, since we have a nice map that designates it. And then we discovered in working with county council there would be some paperwork that staff, county staff, would have to do towards creating a new resolution and possibly environmental determination to go along with that. So your TAC has prepared the letter, which is in your packet, and their report recommends that your committee approve that letter, and we'll put it on some kind of letterhead and either circulate it for signatures or note that the advisory committee, it's coming from the committee to the board. Again, the board's agenda packet's already out, timing situation, but in a situation like this, what happens is we submit it to the agenda clerk. They'll post it on the county website with that item. Mm-hmm. So the board will have it well in advance of their meetings. And I don't know for sure, but I imagine that there is some plan for representatives of Zone 3 to attend the board meeting on county board meeting on the 23rd. It is the lead staff is our county admin, but I plan to have my coat and tie and be in the front row. I expect the board will have questions and essentially give them the same very short briefing that we've had here.
Okay, did anybody have any questions on the report or the letter, either or?
I have a comment.
Go ahead.
You know, when you mentioned the evaporation rate, I mean, I was already paused because we're 10,000 acre feet from the, new declaring a new low level release, assuming that if they remove it. But the evaporation rate even is more concerning because we use more water than what would be left over to get to the 20,000, assuming, throughout the summer, I think. So I support this letter. I think it's appropriate. I think, the more we find out, the more appropriate it is, it sounds like. I don't know what the newly discovered information is on the groundwater, but it sounds like it's causing everybody to kind of relook at things a little bit when they're gauging the health of the basin. So I support this, and I think it would benefit all the cities to be prudent and are, you know, supporting this and keeping this in place until if we get another year, a really good year of rain, and we feel like, oh my gosh, you know, we're, you know, the groundwater's recovered and the Lake Lopez is near capacity. But I think we've all kind of gotten accustomed to a lower rainfall and not having, you know, these amounts of precipitation every year. So, but, you know, we're still using the same amount of water, if not more. Mm-hmm. So we just, I think this is the appropriate action, and I support, you know, this letter.
I have one question, Mark.
Okay, Kristen, go ahead.
Mark, I have a question. So if we have the rainfall, below average rainfall next year, how soon do you think we'd be back at 20,000 acre feet in Lopez?
You know, it's interesting. We've been talking about that at the staff level in the TAC. There's some anecdotal evidence out there that the Lopez watershed typically takes a wet year and then a second wet year, i.e. normal and normal, to really produce runoff. We kind of saw that, you know, with 15-16 was not that far below normal, and we just didn't get any production. And then 16-17 comes in, and we saw all kinds of production. So there's some thinking that even with normal or slightly below normal next year, we would get a pretty good production, pretty good runoff. But again, you know, trying to project the weather forward is not something we're prepared to do. Our resident historian on your committee, Mr. Gehring, reminds the TAC consistently about patterns and long-term trends. He also points out that in his mind, 1 year is not a drought buster. And when you look at the reservoir graphs that have been circulated, we noticed that in the 87 to 92 drought, there was actually a bump, and then another one or two dry years before then the drought was over with. We're hoping not for that. That particular graph, and it reminds me I need to have that for the board, the most striking thing about the reservoir graph is the difference in where we are now and where we were in 2011 when we started into the five-year drought. That fact that we were at 83% capacity. So 40-some, so another 10, 12,000 acre-feet of water above the data point that we're at now. And as we discussed at the TAC, the key thing at the board is convincing them that this is not just a tight water supply or something like that. It really does lean towards, at least from as the LRRP defines, an emergency and emergency situation.
Okay, thank you for that. So my comments are that I'm in support of the letter as well. I think that we don't quite know, you know, the groundwater. We haven't quite gotten a handle on exactly what we have there, how soon that's going to recover. And like I said at our council meeting a couple weeks ago, you know, 63% now. I mean, that just is not, I mean, I know the other reservoirs, you know, recover a lot more quickly than Lopez does, and we have seen some runoff. It's come up, but look how hot it is already, and I just can't imagine people are going to, because it did rain so much, they're going to start using more water. So I'm definitely in favor of sending the letter to the Board of Supervisors. I'm hoping that they'll see that Lopez does perform differently than some of the other reservoirs, doesn't recover as quickly, and we could be right back there in, you know, a year and a half or two. And remember how scary it was sitting up here, you know, 6 months ago? It wasn't fun. So I'm definitely in support of that letter. Thank you.
And if you don't mind, Andrew, I'll go first because I think your letter may answer some of that or the conversation. So logistical question. So On 26 of the staff report, we've got two graphs, mm-hmm. and then in the letter we've got a draft table. Excuse me. So if I'm looking at this correctly, and again I'm going to point to Grover Beach, but it'll have impacts upon all of the jurisdictions. So I see on the top graph or table that Grover Beach under this scenario is 1,323 acre feet, and then down below would be 1,040 acre feet. So, so which one is which? So if the board removes the low reservoir response plan, then we go to the bottom table, correct?
No, the top table.
So we go to the top table.
Yeah.
Okay. So then from that perspective, Grover is going to gain 280 acre feet. Arroyo Grande is going to gain a couple hundred acre feet, but Pismo and Oceano are going to lose about 2,100 acre feet. Mm-hmm. So, I'm definitely supportive of the letter, but what I'd like to do is see if we as an agency can make the partners who are going to lose water whole. Basically, it's about 500 acre feet between Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, mm-hmm. while Pismo and Oceano have significant gains under this approach as well. So I don't want anybody to lose water, but Pismo and Oceano have quite a bit to gain from that, and I don't know how the agricultural element plays into this, but is there an approach that we can support the letter but effectively make the agencies whole if they were to lose water? Not that it's lost water, but I mean it's under this scenario. I mean,
Mark, can you So can you expand on that? Because I'm not even sure if we have the authority here to do that.
Well, I was going to point out if you're talking about one agency having a certain water supply and transferring it to another agency, I've had to study this and talk to a lot of people who worked on it. There are provisions in your water entitlement contract that provides that any agency can ask on permanent or temporary basis to have their point of delivery changed. And the district's involvement in that is to figure out whether or not the system will handle that. So the way that's been interpreted over the years and reported is, let's see, CSA 12's at that end of the pipe, and all that water flows past Arroyo Grande. So if CSA 12, it's a bad example because that's Andrea and I, but CSA 12 sent a letter to the district and said, we would like to have 400 acre feet of our water delivered at Arroyo Grande's turnout. And here's the schedule, so much a month. The district would simply look at that schedule and from an operations standpoint decide, can the system accommodate it? Mm-hmm. If the system can accommodate it, then the district does it. What goes on between CSA 12 and Arroyo Grande, whether you trade dollars, waters, chickens, eggs, is the district is not involved. So that allows the participants to make adjustments in their points of delivery, and that's how that's done. That's how the district's involvement is minimized, by simply saying it's an operational issue. Now, your obligation, CSA 12, still gets a bill for all the water, mm-hmm. still has a contract, take or pay percentage, all of those sorts of things. We don't change our financial approach or anything else. We just change the point of delivery.
Okay, so then from that perspective, so that we as a Zone 3 agency wouldn't do it, but the cities could do it, or the districts and so forth could do it individually.
Yes.
Okay. And I think, too, you know, in looking at the TAC letter and findings, and even from the discussion from the last advisory committee, you know, there was definitely unison among all of our agencies of just, as Kristen had pointed out, how, you know, this drought affected all of us quite severely, and everybody from councils to board of directors everywhere, we've all been concerned. You know, we're neighbors, we're here with each other, and we're all going through this. Which, you know, going back to the letter, to hopefully make the recommendation and hope that the LRP, the drought emergency for Zone 3, can remain in place. You know, it is, you know, and looking at the letter going to the Board of Supervisors, I think that table references well that, you know, there's all agencies are going to be affected differently. And I think, and I've said this the past two meetings, that, you know, Oceana wants to help out too in whatever way. If we keep the LRP in place, you know, in fact, we've had preliminary discussion just within our board, as well as with our staff, that's something that we absolutely want to reach out, help out, be collaborative. Because it is. It's a win-win to hopefully keep the LRP in place, because we don't know. If there's another dry winter, we're all going to be back here, you know, sweating bullets again, wondering what's going to happen. And so being cautious with our approach with something so vital as water, I think, again, it's that kind of win-win situation for all of us. So
I am. Wanted to, as far as the letter goes, the short little graph that you're looking at there, there's a typo right in the first sentence there. I mentioned this to Andrea, but it says, as shown in the table, not all agencies would lose water by existing the LRRP.
Oh, exiting.
It's supposed to, it should say exiting, mm-hmm. which is just a typo, but I don't hate that. I don't want to send this letter to them and confuse them. So if we approve it, we would...
Yeah, I'll make note of that. If you approve this, then I'll work with Dan Heimel on it.
Okay. Any other comments?
I just have one. I can't remember if I read it, but are we proposing, or is the TAC proposing sort of a time limit to the Board of Supervisors to extend this LRRP, or just open-ended? And do you think the Board of Supervisors is going to want some sort of a time frame?
I don't know that the letter proposes a date exactly, but... It talks about groundwater levels October measurements.
October measurements.
So I think we're all expecting that you get the October measurements. There's some QA, QC that has to be done and some analysis. So you're looking into November, late November, if it was going to come back to the board at a scheduled hearing to discuss whether or not we should maintain the LRRP.
Well, perhaps we should just... I mean, I'm just throwing that out there, but perhaps we should just say that we'd like to extend it for a year, because if we're October, November, we don't really know what the rainy season is going to do yet. And so to me, that might be premature to go have them weigh in on something when we don't really know. And it gives them, to me, it's not as open-ended. It's like, well, when are you going to come back? In a year, 2 years, 6 months? And so I understand about the groundwater, but I would say let's look at the groundwater, but let's also look at the weather and what's going to happen. So that would be my suggestion.
Agreed.
Is that something that the board would like to see?
I don't know. Expert opinion? I think if the committee would want to send the letter, and then staff would somehow... Actually, the way to do it, perhaps, is if your board, your committee approves the letter, I'm thinking logistics here, right? Then I would be dependent on your staffs, the TAC, to circulate the letter, if that's appropriate for some kind of signatures or take the draft off, that kind of thing, tomorrow. And then it could be emailed from one of the cities and reported in the cover email that the advisory committee recommends that the board not only extend the emergency, but for the reasons in the letter, extend it for the balance of the water year. That would be March 30. I just say water year because
That would be good.
Yes.
So then the email, the transmittal email and all the attachments ends up in the board agenda packet.
But if we don't put it in the body of the letter, do you think that's clear enough if it's just in an email? The water, you know.
I think obviously it's stronger in the letter. I think So from that perspective, so because then you only have to look in one spot. So.
Right, right. I mean, that would be my recommendation. To me, it's just more black and white and clear. But, you know, I don't know what everyone else thinks.
I'm fine with leaving it. Excuse me, Marsha.
No, no, go ahead.
Adding it in there, you could even add it in the last paragraph. Based on the supporting data presented above, the Zone 3 Advisory Committee is recommending that the Board of Supervisors retain the emergency drought proclamation for Zone 3 through the 2017-2018
water year
mm-hmm. to allow the Zone 3 agencies, blah, 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 blah. That's just a suggestion, but I agree that it's better in writing.
Yeah, it seems to me reevaluating this in November, unless we have a tremendous amount of rain starting in August, it's actually going to look probably at its more vulnerable point, I think, by the end of the summer. You know, you've got all the water that's been used during our what would be considered our hotter months. So, I mean, am I not looking at it right? I mean, if they come back in November, if we haven't had any significant rain, which if we're looking at historical data, you know, it's January, February, March when we have all of our rain, then wouldn't it, I mean, I don't know. To me, I agree with Kristen. I think it needs to be, at least a year. Is that important? Is that number important to the Board of Supervisors when they're looking at extending something? I mean, is there, is it fluid?
I'm just thinking of other interests outside of Zone 3 in the agriculture community relative to the creek and their perspectives. It's really perceptions because we're basing all of this on actual measured numbers and whatnot, and how the board might respond to that. I'm looking at TAC members out there, so invite them to chime in on this one. Mm-hmm. My approach at this point, if you sent the letter with the March 31st date, if the board ask questions, I would be there to tell them that's the water year and how all that works, and that's when we're looking at allocations for next year. And if there were concerns about, you know, from others what's going on, my technique at that point would probably offer to the board rather than change your date, their advisory committee's date, is to suggest that we could check back in after the October numbers and give the board an update on what the situation is. Probably structure that as a meeting back to your committee with another report via the TAC to convey back to the board and say, here's what our situation is.
You think that would give us more flexibility?
I think it would be, and it's always an option. I mean, we always encourage our board to remember they have advisory committees and get you to do work rather than, well, I was going to say me, but I think it's just great for this particular committee in Zone 3. You remember a year ago, 2 years ago, when we did the big presentation at the board, mm-hmm. the situation, that level of detail and participation from all of the agencies, because it really does operate like one entity in relationship to mm-hmm. the board sitting as the district. So if they wanted something in November, they might ask for it. I might make that suggestion if there's some hesitancy. Just to say out loud, I don't think I would get up there and offer to the board as an alternative that they just change your date and wave the wand and say November. Better to come back with a check. And even if it doesn't come up, I imagine the TAC's probably wheels turning right now. Maybe we show up in November anyway. Put an item on there for a board business and do a half-hour discussion update where we are with all of that. Either Zone 3 or countywide. Remember, we have some other 300 other monitoring wells in other basins, and there'll be a lot of curiosity about what October looks like across the county.
Looks like a good time for public comment, Ben. But and I would like to mention that Ben's on the TAC also. And Shane, if you want to chime in anytime, please do.
Yeah, Honorable Committee, I only came up because Mr. Hutchinson invited the TAC up, and I was only going to comment on this one part, and I was going to save the rest of my comments for public comment. But regarding coming you to the extension to the board, I don't know that I would say my recommendation would not necessarily say extend it for a year, because at that point it's almost de facto after a year it expires. I would say something as to reevaluate in November or reevaluate in a year would be my suggestion. That way, if it doesn't happen, the de facto action is that it doesn't expire.
Of course, yeah. Good idea.
Thank you.
Shane, do you have any comment?
Sure.
Thank you.
Do you want public comment on the whole item?
Right after Shane.
Yeah, so Shane Taylor, Utilities Manager, City of Roy Grande. One of the things that letter we tried to craft as a group, we wanted to make sure that the state water contractors receive some type of merit to what they did during the drought by stepping up and using state water instead of Lopez water and keeping that water behind the dam. It would be really tough to say, oh, well, thanks for doing that, but, you know, it's the old adage, no good deed goes unpunished. I don't, you know, we want to be fair, and our neighboring cities that did step up, that had that extra supply, and they used it to help keep more water behind the dam, is, in my mind, really, we want to acknowledge that. And hopefully that letter does that. I know it doesn't come out and say that, but that's my opinion. Anyway, thanks.
Thanks, Shane. Thank you. Do we, any other questions up here first before we open it up to any more public comment?
Mm-mm.
No. Thanks for the input, though. Public comment, Ben, I know you.
Yes, thank you. Ben Fine, Director of Public Works, City Engineer for the City of Pismo Beach. Thank you for having us here this evening and entertaining this item. So at the beginning, Mr. Hutchinson acknowledged that the governor did declare the drought over, and that when we did enter into the drought, we were kind of following the governor's lead. One thing that the governor did do when he declared the drought over was exclude four counties. Mm-hmm. One of the main reasons he did that is those counties are receiving funding and certain project benefits by remaining in the drought. And so it would be very consistent with the governor's actions if the County Board of Supervisors were to rescind the drought emergency except for related to Zone 3. So I just wanted to point that out. I'll also address, Board Member Lee made a comment about agencies losing water or agencies gaining water. Much more water is available to all of the agencies if we stay in the LRRP. And the agencies, they don't necessarily gain water, they just retain the water that they conserved. If you look at the amounts of waters that's there, for example, City of Pismo Beach with the LRP's 2,700 acre feet, we use, under these drought conditions, about 1,600 acre feet. So it's more water than we could possibly use, which makes water available for possible trading of goats and sheep and eggs, as Mr. Hutchinson had alluded to. I wanted to point out this graph. You've probably seen it, but the bottom line there shows what would have happened to the lake if everybody didn't save water and conserve water and use outside sources of water. So Shane had alluded to that. There was talk about the health of the groundwater basin. The elevations in the groundwater basin are it's above 10 feet. It's responded very well to the rain, but looking historically, the trend line, and I wish I had the slide. I just did a presentation to my city council on this. The trend line is down as far as groundwater levels go. So although it is up, it's down compared to previous years before the drought. Can you scroll down in that? There's another graph that I want to show you, and that's the lake level. You keep going. This is out of a memo I prepared for our city council. So this is historic Lopez lake levels, and you can see here the high point before the drought. And I think that at this point in time, seeing how we're experiencing warmer weather and we're expected to have an above average May, we can expect that this last rain season was more of an anomaly than the norm. And if you look at the last 5 years since the drought, and what I did here, I just took this pattern right here, and I copied it and I pasted it right here where we are now. And if we have the exact same weather pattern that we've just experienced, you'll see that the lake goes negative. So when you consider, you know, is it too early to come out of the LRP? I would argue yes, it is. When you look at that and where we are, where we started and where we ended up in this drought, and where we are now, and if we have the previous 5 years of weather pattern, where we could end up, it's a little bit scary. Another thing that we've talked a lot about at the TAC is kind of the thermostat effect. When you set your thermostat at your house for 72, the heater turns on, it takes it to 72. When it deviates below 72, it doesn't kick on immediately. There's a swing there. Otherwise, your thermostat would just go on, off, on, off, on, off, all day long. There's a swing in your house. A lot of thermostats, you can set it 3 degrees, 4 degrees, 5 degrees. But if you set it for 73, it's not turning on until your house gets to 70 or 69, and that keeps your thermostat from going on and off and on and off. I don't think we want to be in the situation where we declare the LRRP over right now, and then come next fall, we're right back into it. These agencies have this water that we've accumulated through the use of state water that we can use to help other agencies by trading goats. Was it goats, sheep, and chickens? I forgot what Mark had suggested we trade. But that water is available, whereas if we come out of the LRP, we have that water for this water year. It's been declared surplus water, and it's our belief that we maintain it through the water year. But at the end of the water year, it just goes back into the pool. And now we can't use it to help anybody. So it sounds like I'm preaching to the choir, because from your comments, you sound like you're in support of the letter and remaining in the LRP. But I just wanted to point out some additional background and some facts which might further bolster that position. If you have any questions, I know Shane and Chris are here, and we've talked about this extensively, and Mark too, and I appreciate a lot of Mark's comments, but we'd be happy to answer any questions. And I wish I had my PowerPoint. I should have thought ahead and brought it, because there was a lot of interesting graphs that I prepared for my city council that show historic rainfall trends and historic groundwater trends, and they're all on the decline. So I think we need to be really careful as we consider exiting the LRP and what impacts that may have. Thank you.
Thank you. So just from agriculture's perspective, we are definitely worried about saltwater intrusion. I'm lucky enough to farm all the way from just below the dam all the way down to the right by the dunes in Oceano. So I'm all the way up and down the zone 3, extent of it. But our wells have definitely come up just like you think they would. They haven't come up as much as you'd think, because the farther you get away from a Rio Grande Creek, the more drastic there's definitely an extreme there last year. But those wells have come up also, but they haven't come up as much as we had expected them to, which I think goes back to some of Ben's comments. So I'm really interested to see some long-range, when they come up with their findings about the well water and how much it's recovered. But the saltwater intrusion is definitely something that has been a hot topic for us recently, and I think they did a good job of addressing it here in this letter.
I would like to follow that up, too, just regarding the letter and all the work that TAC did to put into this expertise, knowledge, research, all of it. Really appreciate all the work that went into this, because to me is extremely convincing. So thank you.
Any other comments?
Question, perhaps. So, and it goes towards, I think, in Andrew's something in the letter, and then something that Mr. Fine mentioned as well that kind of triggered a question. Obviously, the board can do whatever they want, but is county council going to support this as non-precedent setting or as precedent setting? I mean, where's the opportunity there to, I mean, with, I know as you prefaced some point tonight that we're, there's an opportunity to start or continue negotiations of the contracts. So thoughts, comments on that?
On
what? The precedent setting. Oh. Aspect of this possible of us basically saying we want to continue operating under our own rules.
Oh.
Effectively, I mean, requesting that the LRRP remain
well,
in place.
To date, council's perspective is that if the board wants to extend the LRRP, extend the emergency just for Zone 3, mm-hmm. right? I likely they would recommend it to the board, make that finding, and then direct staff to prepare an appropriate resolution and environmental document to show up on a consent agenda in a couple of weeks. Beyond that, I haven't had any consultations with them one way or the other. And my perspective is there's no such thing as precedent setting. Because I live in the details, and they're always different.
I like that answer. So, so I'm prepared to make a motion. If
could I make one suggestion, and this is in regards to the actual subject of the letter that goes to the Board of Supervisors. So here it states, recommendation from the Lopez Reservoir Zone 3 Advisory Committee to defer rescinding the emergency drought proclamation for Zone 3. Wanted to include right after that proposal, and that the low reservoir response plan for Zone 3 remain in effect, just to stay consistent with what we're asking for in the letter. It was just something that...
And actually, I had something very similar, but it was more along the lines of blah, 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 and reevaluate the LRRP at the end of the water year, March 31st, 2018, which kind of goes towards what I think Ben was saying, mm-hmm. and what Kristen, we were saying, so that it doesn't automatically... expire.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. We need to officially have a motion, so
I'll make a motion.
Let's shoot for that.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we approve the declaration of this letter, making grammatical changes as mentioned by the chair, and adding into the subject line and reevaluate the LRRP at the end of the water year, parentheses, March 31st, 2018, and including that or similar language in the last paragraph of the letter.
Second.
Excuse me. Sorry.
I should ask, do we have any public comment first before we make that motion?
We did.
Oh, we did ask.
That's what Ben was.
Oh, any other? No? Okay.
So now we have any discussion? I know that it sounded like Mark was saying that we'd be better not to put a date on it. Is that what you were saying, Mark?
That was Ben's suggestion. And
not putting a date?
Or to further evaluate.
Change, reevaluate at the end of the water year.
Reevaluate at the end of that water year.
Okay. Which would be the March 31st, 2018.
Rather than. Yeah,
but you had mentioned October/November.
Right.
What was that date? Is there some specific date with the board that something happens in October that we're not aware of?
No, we were talking about the fact that the letter originally doesn't say extended until when,
mm-hmm.
and then that the letter puts a lot of emphasis on the October groundwater measurements. So are we, and your committee talked about, I don't know if you talked about it, I talked about then perhaps sort of tying the end of the LRRP to the or continuance of it,
mm-hmm.
Based on groundwater levels, but your committee further discussed, well, what if it doesn't rain? So I think we've chucked that idea.
Okay. Except for the fact that I was going to bring that back as possibly under future agenda items.
Okay. Mm. All right.
So, yeah.
So is everyone, any other comments? I think, Andrea, we need to roll call, correct?
Yes, so we had Member Lee motion and Member Barnidge second. So Member Lee?
Yes.
Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Member Ikeda?
Yes.
Member Barnidge?
Yes.
And Member Brunet?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Logistical question. So there was some discussion about who's going to kind of carry the water for the letter. Mm-hmm. So, Ben, since we're in your city.
Drew the short straw.
Right, can we ask you to be the purveyor of making sure this letter gets signed by all the appropriate people?
Yeah, I will work with Dan Heimel from WSC, who prepared the letter and circulated it to make sure the changes get incorporated, and then we'll usher it around the cities to get signatures.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just have one question about that May 23rd Board of Supervisors meeting. Ben, are you going to attend that Board of Supervisors meeting on the 23rd or any Public Works directors? I mean, I know Mark will be there, but you just don't ever quite know what's going to go on there.
I will definitely be there, okay. And I will pretty much share with them the same comments I shared with you and the same graph put up here. So,
yes. Awesome. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, we're moving on to future agenda items. And Andrea, are we just supposed to look at those and add to them if we want to?
We just look at them, reevaluate them. If there's something new that you want to bring up, I think Member Lee mentioned something. Is that correct, Chuck?
Yeah, and I think it could fall under the LRRP, just as the future agenda items. And Mark, perhaps you can help me with this crafting, is after the... it would be potentially a board update after the October well reports are available to kind of a presentation to us with a possible presentation to the board with those findings.
I think if we just write fall update to the Board of Supervisors.
Exactly.
That works.
Yeah, I wouldn't include the well in it.
Right. Okay.
And then I just have one item that I wanted to see. I think the TAC's going to be looking at it, and maybe we could put it on as a future agenda item if the committee concurs. So when the Arroyo Grande City Council looked at rescinding our Stage 1 drought emergency, there was a lot of discussion among the council members about the safe yield for Lopez Lake, because basically that safe yield's based on conditions and years of graphs and data that really doesn't exist anymore. When you look at all that information, it's a new normal, whether it's global warming or whatever, and all the modeling, the contracts are based on, you know, all around what is the safe yield. So council directed staff, and I know that Shane and Jeff brought it up at the TAC meeting, that the safe yield maybe is a different safe yield because it's things are different now. So I know they're going to discuss it, so maybe it will come before us eventually, but I just wanted to sort of throw that out there because it was brought up at the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting, and a couple of the council members were definitely of the opinion that should be not necessarily changed, but looked at with all the new data, especially, you know, the last 5 years and then like 17 years. So there's my 2 cents on that.
Okay, I think we can add that. Any other additions?
Noted.
Okay, moving on to any final comments from the committee?
I'd like to make a comment about, you know, WSC and Dan Heimel, who put together this letter and a lot of the research. It's pretty impressive, you know, for new advisory members or new TAC members. I mean, it's really a history lesson, and I wish that I mean, this is great for, I know, for you and for all of us, really. But for anybody that's new, this is really just a great piece of work.
Absolutely.
He did a great job.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any
comments?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Go ahead.
Two quick comments. The first one, from a county staff perspective, wanted to let your committee know that the County Public Works Director is now regularly convening a work group of water managers across the county to look at regional issues from a technical perspective. And the point I wanted to make here is that your Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee, the way it operates, was the impetus and model for that group, particularly the way your public works directors and managers have worked together to manage this drought as a single agency has been, in my opinion, extraordinary. So if you have any extra commendation plaques lying around, that would be my personal recommendation. The second, a little more serious, you may have noticed in the news lately, news out of Oroville, California. We were contacted in our office by the press and others shortly after, or as that incident was developing on the weekend on my cell phone, pointing out that Oroville Dam and Lopez Dam, in the opinion of some people, have some similarities relative to the time that they were built, the 1960s, built and designed, both earth-filled dams, and both with long concrete spillways. And there was some interaction with the press at that time about how the dam is managed and inspected and taken care of, which is quite an extraordinary story. Hopefully at some point we can get a tour out there and have the operators talk about the work that goes on in actually operating a dam more than just opening and closing the valves. Subsequent to that, there was a report out of UC Berkeley, retired engineer professor, that was highly critical of DWR and their issues with the dam and what some of the sources were. That also triggered more inquiries to the Public Works Department. I'm glad to report to you, it's not generally known, that in 1985, senior staff at that time became concerned about some issues with the spillway, contradicting actually the DSOD, Department of Safety of Dams inspection reports, and commissioned, likely with the support of the TAC and Advisory Committee, engineering studies, and identified certain repairs that needed to be made. As that report was coming to a conclusion, PG&E produced new seismic information out of Diablo Canyon that triggered the massive seismic retrofit from 2000 to 2003. What's little known is that substantial repairs and changes were made to the spillway at that time. And investigations were done. Some of those directly correlate to the early criticisms of Oroville. So we can confirm relative to design errors or errors in calculations that while Lopez Dam, they did discover some errors, they're not critical. They're clearly known and don't threaten the condition of the spillway. Those repairs also did a lot of work on the drainage system under the spillway and confirmed it was operating and added inspection reports. We've been able to maintain that and also confirmed that the departures from standard design at the time don't exist at Lopez. It all remains to be seen if any or all of those contributed to the failure at Lopez. We don't have any official reports. So it is our plan at this point. My plan is we're on the verge of convening a panel of the most senior engineers in our department to bring them up to speed on where we are. There was a rumor that DWR was going to issue some sort of mandatory inspection and repair letter, which we haven't seen, and the rumor's gone away. So I think what's happening is we'll get an official analysis from the independent review panel at Oroville and then see how that may or may not apply to Lopez. But again, the good news, the spillway was underwent substantial repairs and some upgrades in 2003. And if you ever get the opportunity to stand in it, it is much larger than it appears when you're on that bridge. If you're underneath that bridge standing there, it's actually humongous. But it is amazing the condition of it. We, as you know, we also manage Salinas Dam, and it shows its age. What is it, 65 years old? Lopez, a lot of the concrete you're looking at is from 1968. It does not look like it. It looks like it's from last week. So we're very confident at this point and tracking the Oroville situation closely. And as more information comes out, we'll certainly be consulting with the TAC. And I expect at some point coming to your committee with a formal update and perhaps even onto our board, depending on, again, what comes out of Oroville. But for now, very happy with the results of the information that I was able to discover.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. Thank you to staff, and thank you for all you guys for chiming in. Good teamwork. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.